Listen now to Man Against the Crippler. Polio, the only epidemic disease still on the increase in the world in the year 1953. Polio, a disease of special cruelty, a disease that must be conquered. Listen to Man Against the Crippler, the story of the scientist's fight to penetrate the mystery and make the world safer for your child. The program is brought to you transcribed as a public service by this station in cooperation with the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis. Your narrator is Everett Sloan. Now, Man Against the Crippler.
This is the story of a search for the answer to a riddle. The riddle is polio. The searchers, men of science. In the beginning is half a century of darkness, of failure. In the middle is light, discovery, the culmination of years of devoted study by hundreds of men and women. For the story of man's search to solve the mystery of polio is the story of scientists of enormous faith and extraordinary dedication. When did the disease called infantile paralysis first become a terror for parents and so start man on his search? There is evidence of cases of the disease dating back centuries before Christ. But there is no recorded evidence that it ever appeared in epidemic form before 1880. A German pioneer scientist named Jakob Heiner said infantile paralysis was a disease of the central nervous system. In 1887, a Swede named Oscar Medin said it was an infectious disease. In 1905, another Swedish scientist named Ivar Wickman announced theories about how the disease was spread from child to child. These three men were right. But their theories did not help them prevent a single case of infantile paralysis. The time is the early 1900s. You enter the laboratory of a bacteriologist. In the far corner of the room, a man is bent over a microscope. You watch him. After a moment, he draws back and stares into space. You ask him, "Have you found anything?"
"No."
He swings around, gets up, and comes toward you.
"Negative. Always negative. That's the 47th negative slide."
You ask him what he's trying to find.
"The cause. The cause of infantile paralysis. Is it a bacteria? Come here to my lab and peer and tell me this. Suppose under my microscope I do find something new that might be the disease agent of infantile paralysis. How do I prove it? Can I test it on a human? Of course not. Can I test it on an animal? What animal? We don't know of any animal in the world that can be infected with poliomyelitis. Pardon me, I'm excited. I don't mean to. I don't even know how to investigate this thing. And little children are still dying of it and becoming crippled by it. And I don't know how to stop a single case."
Infantile paralysis. Crippler. A mystery. Darkness. They not only do not know the cause, they do not even know how to go about seeking the answer. Now it is the year 1908, Vienna, Austria. Two scientists named Dr. Langsteiner and Dr. Papa enter their laboratory early one morning.
"Langsteiner, look, the monkey. He's sick. He has poliomyelitis."
"Calm yourself, Papa. We do not know for sure. We must confirm it."
Of course.
"But if the monkey does have poliomyelitis, it will mean we have been the first to transmit the disease to an animal. A laboratory animal for scientific research."
"Oh, but there's more. We know the cause."
"We think we know the cause. A filterable virus."
Virus means poison. A poison that had passed through a porcelain filter. Passed through the filter's invisible holes. Tiny holes, like pores in the skin. The Austrian doctors knew the size of those pores. they were too small to permit bacteria to pass through. But the material that infected the laboratory monkey with poliomyelitis did pass through. What was the material?
It was material from the nervous system of a child who unfortunately died of poliomyelitis.
Question. Would the two Austrian scientists now be able to prevent this terrible disease?
Well, not yet, certainly. It is a step, but it does not help us now to stop a single case.
A laboratory animal susceptible to polio. A light dawns. A new era of research begins. It looks like the breaking of the biggest polio bottleneck. But is it? Monkeys must be imported. They're enormously expensive. And one monkey is usually good for only one experiment. Only a few scientists can afford polio research with monkeys. Still, in spite of all obstacles and limitations, in spite of the lack of funds, the discouragements and failures, the work in the laboratories goes on. 1916.
America's first large-scale epidemic of the crippler. Terror. Hysteria. Thousands of children sicken and die.
1918.
A scientist demonstrates that people can carry something in their blood that makes them immune to the disease.
1935.
Two doctors develop polio vaccines, test them in mass human trials, and the trials end in failure.
In 1937, a scientist develops a nose spray to prevent polio, and mass human trials end in failure. And as the search goes on, science has still not learned to protect a single child from the cruel blow of the crippler. Then something happens. Are the years of effort by men of science devoted to solving the mystery of polio to be wasted? Or will man, faced with frustration, refuse to be beaten? Will he find a leader?
For we have found common cause in presenting a solid front against an insidious but deadly enemy, the scourge of infantile paralysis. Tonight, because of your splendid help, we are making it possible to unite all the forces against one of these plagues by starting the work of the new National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis. We expect, through scientific research, through epidemic first aid, through dissemination of...
In January 1938, an organization is born to unify man's fight to penetrate the mystery of polio and conquer it. To draw up a scientific blueprint for battle against the crippler.
In every part of the land. For we know that those who work to help the suffering find true spiritual fellowship in that labor of love.
And those who work to help the suffering start the research blueprint. Where? Laboratories. Equip them for the job. Who? Scientists. Train them for the job. What? Can science accept everything they think they know about polio that has been discovered on a small scale without adequate control? No. Repeat for confirmation. How? What laboratory techniques are needed to solve the polio riddle? Find out. Experiment. One year passes, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. And now it's the year 1948, the 10th anniversary of the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis. A good time to take stock. And a newspaper reporter does just that in the office of the chief medical researcher at a large eastern university.
Our regular science writer's on vacation, Doc. I don't know beans about medical research, so don't get sore if I make some stupid remarks. But it seems to me that you fellows haven't made much progress at all in the last 10 years.
Yeah, sometimes it seems that way to us, too, Mr. Johnson. But actually, we've learned a good deal. We've learned...
Hold a minute, Doc. Let me put these things down.
Oh.
Okay, go ahead.
Now, one very valuable thing we've learned, Mr. Johnson, is that most people are immune to polio.
Oh? That's something I didn't know. How come?
Well, we found that it's because they've actually had polio in a mild, unrecognized form, and their blood has built up what we call antibodies.
Antibodies?
Substances which fight disease.
Yeah.
You see, when children get yellow fever, for instance, their bodies naturally manufacture antibodies against yellow fever, which make them immune to further attacks from the yellow fever virus. And so in polio research, we've discovered that people have polio antibodies in their blood.
Let me get this straight, Doc. People who've had polio have these, antibodies in their blood, right?
Yes. But we've also found them in the blood of people who've never had a diagnosed case.
Well, that's interesting, Doc, believe me. But what does it mean to our readers?
Well, it means that there's a possibility that we'll finally lick polio through the means of a vaccine.
This vaccine will make people immune, is that it?
Well, theoretically, yes. It's a possible answer, one that we're working on constantly, but well, there are difficulties. For one thing, we haven't found any way to grow the right kind of polio virus in quantity in the laboratory, so even if we had a vaccine that works, we wouldn't have the supplies of virus necessary to make enough of it for the general public.
So much for that, then. What other progress can I say you've made?
Well, Mr. Johnson, as of right now, January 1948, we know definitely that there's more than one type of poliovirus, at least two, and probably more. One we call the Lansing type, which will infect rodents, and another that won't. Now, that means that there are also at least two types of polio antibody. And we've learned that immunity to one type doesn't give immunity to the other.
Wait a minute, Doc. You mean people can have polio twice?
Twice, and possibly more than that. So you can see that any polio preventive we might come up with would be unsatisfactory unless it protected against all types of the disease.
You know, Doc, I begin to see this problem's a lot bigger than I thought when I walked in here. You medical research guys got a man-sized fight in your hands.
These may seem to you like insignificant things that we've discovered, Mr. Johnson. No, they don't make headlines, and they're not very dramatic. But to help us find these little things, the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis has donated millions of dollars for the training of expert investigators and for research into almost every angle of polio which might, with good scientific reason, have a chance of helping to solve the mystery. And there's your dramatic story, Mr. Johnson. The people, through the National Foundation, helping the men with the test tubes and microscopes to conquer the crippler. In the history of medicine, it's something that's never before happened.
Yeah, that's an angle, all right. Well, Doc, maybe I'll check you again in a couple of years. Meanwhile, keep punching at that bug, huh? I got a kid of my own.
We'll keep at it, Mr. Johnson. We'll keep trying.
And that was the story in 1948. In spite of another decade of staggering effort, the scientists had not established any method for controlling polio. They still could not prevent a single child from getting polio. The National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis holds a series of regularly scheduled meetings of the top polio research scientists in the country. And out of these meetings comes a new scientific schedule of attack on the crippler. Project number one, virus typing program, a 3-year project. How many types of virus causing paralytic poliomyelitis are there? It will take 4 leading scientists and their associates in 4 big research laboratories across the country and thousands of monkeys and countless hours of dull repetition of the same tests and double tests and cross tests to carry out this project. When it is done, they will know how many types there are. In 1949, before the virus typing program is completed, a man announces something that suddenly throws a flood of light in the darkness surrounding the mystery of polio. In this age of science, when men are building cyclotrons and supersonic planes and rocket ships, how do you picture the scientist's laboratory? How do you suppose the key discovery in modern research on polio comes about? You enter the laboratory past a secretary whose desk is in a corridor, squeezed between a doorway and something that looks like a deep freeze. You find the room small and cluttered around the edges with books and folders and pamphlets. You see old-fashioned green window shades and ancient zinc basins with brass fittings. And in the midst of antiquity, a gleaming white modern machine. On the blacktop counters, you see the objects familiar to every schoolboy. The test tubes and flasks and long glass tubes. And the Bunsen burner with its faint bluish flame. Could part of the answer to the polio riddle be here? Two women in white coats sit opposite each other at a counter. A smallish man stands beside them, a tweedy, quiet-looking man with thinning hair, no jacket, and an open vest.
Let's check it now. The nutrient fluid?
3 parts balanced salt solution, 1 part ox serum, ultrafiltrate, 3 cc's to each culture.
Did he knock them?
1/10 of a cc.
All right. Now,
One woman lifts a test tube from a rack and holds it up to the light for a moment. You see small specks of non-nervous tissue, surrounded by a sticky-looking substance clinging to the inside of the tube. You cannot see it, but the last liquid drop contains Lansing poliomyelitis virus from the brain of an infected animal. The man watches and wonders and hopes. He hopes that the basic fluid will keep the tissue alive. He hopes that the virus will feed on the tissue and multiply in the test tube. He hopes to prove it by removing the fluid every few days and adding fresh fluid without adding more virus. After several such dilutions, he will inoculate monkeys with the fluid. If they become paralyzed, it will be apparent that the virus did multiply. He will also examine the tissue under a microscope, seeking typical poliovirus damage to the cells. He succeeds. Here in a little laboratory, musty with age and the secrets of research that has gone before, here in a common test tube, in 6 cents worth of glass, a process starts that is to break the major polio bottleneck and to affect all mankind. For this scientist repeats his experiments in different ways, with different tissues. And later, when the virus typing program proves that there are 3 types of polio virus, he still succeeds. 1949. All 3 types of the virus of poliomyelitis can be grown on non-nervous tissue in test tube cultures. The news of this development bursts like a bombshell on the scientific world. The work, the research, the tests went on. In the laboratories across the country, hope mingled with despair, success with failure. Progress was made, yes, but slowly. And meanwhile, the crippler still struck swiftly and at will. And then came another significant discovery.
Test number 1097 concluded. Result? Positive.
Nature of the test?
We have injected into monkeys that portion of whole blood which contains antibodies and is called gamma globulin. With gamma globulin, we have been successful in preventing polio paralysis in the animals.
But will gamma globulin protect humans against polio paralysis under conditions of natural rather than laboratory infection? In the summer of 1952, you walk down a street in Houston, Texas, and come to a crowd of children and parents lined up outside a school building. And you ask a woman at the door what it's all about.
Why, this is one of those gamma globs, or one of those GG injection clinics, and we're all just thrilled about it. All these little girls and boys are getting shots inside there, you know. We're just having a terrible epidemic of the polio in Houston, and so they're having these field trials of this gamma glob... Oh, dear, this GG, and the hope is it'll stop the paralysis. Just thousands of children all over town are getting polio shots.
Yeah, they had tests in Provo over in Utah last year, and they tell me that more thousands are going to get shots in Sioux City starting next week. I just want to tell you, nothing like this has ever happened in medical history in the United States or in the state of Texas either. First day, I had my own little boy in for a shot, and of course, I hope he got the gamma globulin, but I don't know. Nobody knows. But I'm telling you the truth. It's just a wonderful thing to see the way everybody's cooperating.
Mass human tests of gamma globulin. Almost 55,000 children receive injections at a cost of $1 million in March of Dimes money. And a scientist waits and wonders and hopes. A scientist from the University of Pittsburgh who has planned and directed these history-making field trials. The scientist waits. And the world which stands to be affected waits and hopes. Will GG work? Is man about to find an answer to polio? On October 22, 1952, the announcement is made to the world. Gamma globulin seems to protect against polio paralysis for about 5 weeks. For the first time in man's long struggle against the crippler, it can be said that he has prevented a case of polio. Is the search over? Is the battle won? No, not yet. For GG is not the final answer to polio. GG protection lasts only 5 weeks. GG supplies are too short to meet the demand. The crippler will continue to strike down more children than man can protect. And the search must go on.
The important thing to remember about the GG field trials is that they showed us something we had to know, that a sufficient amount of antibody in the bloodstream seems to protect against paralysis.
Progress. An important step forward. But still, not enough to banish the crippler for good. And so, in university laboratories across the country, at Yale and Johns Hopkins, at the University of Pittsburgh and many others, men of science continue to look for new light on polio. New theories, new tests, new hopes. The pace of the research is accelerated now. The lights of the laboratories burn late into the night. And though in this age of the atom we have come to expect miracles of our men of science, it must be remembered that they too are human. Subject to exhaustion.
Oh, I'm sorry, Doctor. The beaker just slipped from my hand.
That's all right, Anne. You're tired.
Yes.
Better go home and get some rest. We'll start again tomorrow.
Subject to anger.
What the devil is this, Don? I told you a saline solution, not alcohol. You've ruined the whole culture.
And subject, perhaps more than any other group of human beings in the world, to frustration and despair.
I've got the report on the last test, Doctor. I'm afraid it's not good.
Result, negative. Two words. Two words are all we've got to show for 10 weeks of work.
Good night, Joe.
I'm sorry, Doctor.
I know.
They're human beings, these scientists, like you and me. Their eyes smart and their bones ache when they are tired. Sometimes they lose their patience and their tempers. And all too often they know a despair so painful that it's impossible to put into words. But the human spirit, too, is a hardy thing. And so the work went on, in spite of all the failures and obstacles. Until finally there came another announcement that was to stir the hopes of the world.
Research conducted during recent years by the National Foundation grantees clearly suggests that a practical method for the control of paralytic polio might be achieved through vaccination.
A vaccine for polio. Wonderful news. Exciting news. But wait. Is this the final answer? The end of the search?
Remember me, Doc? Johnson of the Press Dispatch.
Oh, of course, Mr. Johnson. Sit down. Now, what's on your mind?
This new polio vaccine, Doc,
My editor wants to do a series on it, play it up big. After all, this looks like it.
Well, I wish I could say it were, Mr. Johnson, but...
Oh, wait a minute. You mean this vaccine isn't the answer to preventing polio?
Well, it may be. We have high hopes for it, but hope isn't enough in the face of the problem we're confronted with.
I can see another headline flying out the window.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson, but we're dealing with human lives here. Theories aren't enough. We must be certain.
Well, when will that be, Doc?
When all the necessary experiments have been completed and repeated and subjected to every laboratory test. Then, and if they're successful, and we're absolutely sure we've got an effective and safe polio vaccine, then you'll have your headline, Mr. Johnson.
All right, Doc.
My editor isn't going to be happy about this. He wants that story.
So do we, Mr. Johnson. So do we.
You enter a bacteriological laboratory at one of America's great universities. Perhaps here in this room, among the test tubes, the gleaming steel sinks and freezers and refrigerators, the crippler will finally be defeated. Perhaps. The emphasis is on that word, on the indefinite, the unproven, the unknown. A man in a white coat comes toward you and holds up a small bottle.
This is the experimental vaccine.
The contents of the bottle are cloudy, like diluted milk. This is the fluid on which man is pinning his hopes for freedom from polio. You ask, could this mean the end of the search? There is no answer. Not yet. But we are on the threshold. To bring us to the threshold has taken more than half a century of relentless and dedicated search by men and women of science against a disease as stubborn and capricious as it is cruel. It has taken 15 years of organized research that has been a triumph of cooperation by hundreds of scientists, most of them anonymous, each contributing his jigsaw puzzle piece in the common cause. And it has taken your money through the March of Dimes to pay for this research. The National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis has used almost $15 million for research grants to date. Victory, when it comes, will mean victory not here alone, but freedom from polio for children and adults in every corner of the world. As you count the days, try to match the patience and faith of our men of science, and the day of victory over the last great epidemic disease to attack mankind, the crippler, polio, will come.
You have been listening to Man Against the Crippler, a special report on polio brought to you transcribed as a public service by this station in cooperation with the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis. Starring as narrator was Everett Sloan. For information about precautions you can take to guard your child against polio this summer, get in touch with your local county chapter of the National Foundation. Your chapter stands ready to give you any help you might need, including financial aid, should polio strike in your family.